Old CFI, new tricks. Max Trescott discovers seaplanes and LSAs. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest is 2008 National CFI of the Year Max Trescott, who is also an instructor in California, is the proprietor of Glass Cockpit Publishing, has a couple of excellent books out, has a blog at maxtrescott.com, and now is a contributing columnist to EAA Sport Aviation Magazine. Max, thanks for joining us today, and I understand that you are a recently minted seaplane pilot.
Hello, Paul. Yes, you know what? I can't think of anything more fun that I've done in my aviation career than get qualified to fly around on floats. I know that you've done a few hours of that, but it just it opens up a whole new world, and I really love getting back into the mode of having to be a student. I think it's given me a better appreciation for what my students are going through, but it was great fun as well.
I hadn't thought about the aspect of it putting you back in the seat as a student again for the first time in a while, but that's interesting perspective as well. I remember when I lived in Florida, and every time I go back to visit there, obviously there are a lot of aviation events still held there, and you have the chance to be flying in at altitude and looking down as the plane's on final. It dawns on me that what a great emergency plan to be flying in Florida to have floats on an aircraft. And no matter where you are, it does open up a lot more possibilities in terms of place to operate your machine.
And I hadn't really considered this until a couple of the instructors said, you're better off and safer flying a float plane. I thought, really? Why is that? And they point out that certainly if you have an emergency over water, it's a non-issue. And with the amphibious, even with regular straight floats, you can go ahead and put it down in the field. You're going to bang up the floats a little bit, but the airplane apparently is going to come out undamaged most of the time. You'll just reskin the bottom of your floats and off you go. So it's hard to believe, but float planes apparently are safer.
Now, what kind of paradigm adjustments did it take for you to get into a seaplane? Because you've got a lot of hours in planes that are on wheels. What were some of the things that took some getting used to for you?
Good question. I think that the biggest shock for me actually was how easy the first landing was. it was one of those cases where the instructor pulled the power. We were over the lake. We circled down and we touched down. And I thought, wow, that's all there is to it. And maybe that was not the right introduction, because as I continued to study over the next couple of days, I learned to do four different kinds of landings and four different kinds of takeoffs. And there's certainly more complexity than I would have expected in different water conditions. So I think that it was kind of like being an Eskimo who has 30 different words for different types of ice. I now have appreciation for the different types of water that are out there and the different things that seaplanes pilots have to do depending upon water conditions.
Well, now you have written a lot in your career about safety topics. What are some that come higher up on the list in a seaplane than they do on normal land aircraft? I mean, there are things that happen to seaplane pilots that aren't as big a deal for pilots of single-engine land aircraft. And I'm thinking particularly in certain lighting conditions and that sort of thing.
One of the things that surprised me is just how complex the the taxi to the tie down is.
Oh yeah, and,
it had never really fully occurred to me that when you jump in the airplane and you push off from the dock and start the airplane, there are no brakes after that. You're going to be in constant motion, until the time that you bring that aircraft back into to land or to the dock. So that's that's a big one there. For example, at one point I'd gotten out of the airplane and I had the keys in my pocket. And my instructor was getting back into the airplane, and he said, always, always, always leave the keys in a seaplane. He said, there's nothing worse than being pushed away from the dock, go to start the engine and find that you don't have the key, that you're just running adrift. I read a little bit about some of the different problems pilots have run into because of that situation. So, for example, getting started from the dock, you may find that the wind and the currents are a little bit different than you think, and you may end up bumping into another airplane near you, or if the engine doesn't start immediately, you're suddenly going downstream. Just all kinds of new issues that are of no consequence at all to people who are flying on the land.
I hadn't thought about leaving the keys in it. I'm not sure the TSA will be pleased with our broadcast today, but I certainly understand that. Max, when we come back from the break, I want to talk a little bit about a couple of other interesting new aircraft that you've spent some time in recently. Max Trescott is my guest. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. Paul Plack here with Max Trescott to talk about a couple of new light sport aircraft. Max, at the time our listeners are hearing this, it's going to be a couple weeks since the U.S. Sport Aviation Expo at Sebring, Florida. Piper Aircraft took that opportunity to introduce the Piper Sport, which is not a completely new airplane to a lot of people who have followed that segment, but certainly it's going to come to a lot more attention now that it has the Piper name on it. And also the Cessna Skycatcher. Tell us about your experience, what you think of light sport aircraft in general in terms of flying them, and what you've thought of these two in particular.
Sure. I haven't had a whole lot of exposure to light sport until probably the past 6-9 months or so. I flew the Remus at Air Venture this past August, and then I flew the CTLS in November. And then within less than a week of each other, I flew the Cessna Skycatcher and the new Piper Lightsport LSA. And overall, I'm very impressed. I think that all of these companies, that at least the ones that I've flown, have put together very good aircraft that I think are going to help revitalize the training market in particular, and may turn out to be excellent aircraft for individuals that are looking for, you know, fun, easy to fly, short haul kind of aircraft. The probably the one thing that I found to be true that I, you know, read other people talking about is that they do tend to be a little bit more sensitive in pitch, so they are a little bit lighter on the controls. So in some cases I've ballooned a little bit, and other cases I've not on landing. But other than that, I found that their flying characteristics were really quite good. And what's really also remarkable is they're also getting very excellent glass panels in these light aircraft as well.
Well, one of the ways in which the inability to cheat the laws of physics present an issue in this class, I think, is wing loading. In order to get the stall speeds and everything else that are required of the category, in a lot of cases, they're a little bit like a cork on the water when you get into winds. Have you noticed that to be an issue compared with some of the heavier stuff you fly?
You know, I haven't really been in a lot of turbulence in any of them. Little tiny bit in one of them. So I haven't really had a chance to feel what that's like. But I would agree, if you're not going to ride through turbulence as well as you would say in a 172, which is going to have slightly higher wing loadings, it's probably going to be fairly close to what people might be used to in flying a Cessna 150 or a 152, which means, yeah, you get into severe bumps, you're going to feel them.
Do you have any thoughts on the segment as a whole? Because right now there are over 100 models that are qualified as light sport aircraft on sale in the U.S. There are some which haven't sold a single plane. Others have sold one or two over a period of 1 or 2 years. And some people are thinking that 2010 is going to be the year that starts to shake out.
Yeah, I've thought the shakeout would occur before 2010. And, you know, I've talked before as we've, you know, wandered around Air Venture together that, it just has to happen. So, sure, I think that, probably a year or two from now, we may be talking about 80 companies instead of 106. I think that increasingly the companies that are in the top 10 are probably going to start to take a disproportionate share of the sales. And I would expect that. I think that people who are buying airplanes are going to want to tend to buy them from the leaders who are going to have the bigger, the stronger support networks, the better parts availability, and perhaps even more mature design, simply because they've had more aircraft out there. They've gotten more feedback and they've been able to fix all the small kinks. The airplanes that I've flown are fantastic, and I would recommend all of them to anybody who's interested in buying one.
Well, then that brings me around to the question, what about San Jose flight training? Are you guys, do you have now, or are you going to have an LSA on the flight line?
Well, I actually am an independent flight instructor flying with a couple of different flying clubs, and the two that I fly with do not have any LSA available. If I look at some of the other flight schools here in the area, there are some that may have, for example, one. I know one that has one Remos, and actually that's the one that comes to mind that's available for rent. So I think that's going to change pretty quickly. Certainly when Cessna starts shipping later this year, there are going to be a lot of 150s and 152s replaced, I think. I think the key thing is that the cost of learning to fly in these aircraft is probably not going to be significantly lower, simply because the acquisition cost of these airplanes is between $100,000 and $150,000, and that's expensive compared to, you know, buying an older 150 for, I don't know, $30,000 or something like that. But the operating cost, the daily cost, is going to be lower since they burn less gas and the maintenance is going to be lower. So I think people will still be paying, you know, $90 and $100 an hour to rent these aircraft, but they're going to be renting much, much nicer airplanes. And I think that probably will attract more people to learning to fly.
Now, and they're going to be renting aircraft, too, that as we've talked about in the past, are equipped with at least a low-end glass panel solution in a lot of cases. And that's a start on not just learning to fly, but learning more modern equipment than you would in a 150.
Yeah, it's an excellent place to start. And by the way, I had fun talking with Cessna's First Lady, Rose Pelton, at Sebring. And what a great, spokesperson for Cessna. She is out there having fun learning to fly in her airplane. She has 16 hours. She did a 9-hour cross-country from Wichita down to Sebring. And as she said, that she had no qualms about that, doing that at all. When her husband Jack suggested that she make the trip, she did that with her instructor, Kirby Ortega. And she was there at the show every day talking with customers walking by. And I think that she's just a great example of someone who is getting into flying, not as a youngster, but as someone who's an empty nester and is out having fun doing it.
Of course, she has all of our admiration and envy because she has a sky catcher.
Yeah, no, I think she's having way too much fun, and I hope that we see her at more of the shows and that she inspires more people to learn to fly.
Max Trescott is the 2008 National CFI of the Year, and Max, we're going to recommend people go to maxtrescott.com. They can check out your blog, find links to your other aviation-related enterprises, and also recommend people check out their latest edition of the EAA magazine for your Trends Aloft column. I think it's going to be one worth watching, and we look forward to seeing you at the shows this year.
Thanks, Paul. I'm looking forward to seeing you as well, too.
You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.